The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Alexis Petridis. This is Music Weekly. This week...
Some things can look great on paper and they say exactly what you want to say. And then you sing them and you're like, that sounds like shit. That does not. That sounds clunky and awkward.
St. Vincent explains how Christian Talk Radio and Janet Jackson's Rhythm Nation helped create what is her most personal album yet. And we review new tracks by Leonard Cohen, Balogi and J. Cole, all in this week's Music Weekly from The Guardian. Hello, welcome. In the studio this week, Rebecca Nicholson. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. And Doreen Linsky.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. Well, we're going to start this week with an interview that Rebecca went out to get for us.
Yes.
With St. Vincent. How did you find her when
should
you met her?
Should I tell the story of how
No, don't tell that story because that makes us look just really unprofessional.
Really unprofessional.
And, you know, obviously I don't want the listening public to realise what a farrago this podcast actually is. So now, how was she anyway, St. Vincent?
She was great. She's a very articulate lady.
That's very good.
Yes.
Excellent.
Very smart. And that album's actually my favourite album of the year, so I was quite excited.
Oh, really? Oh, that's a great thing.
Yes.
What is it that you like about her her music?
Well, I didn't know anything about it. I ended up reviewing that album for Film and Music, which was, and it's her third album, but that was kind of my introduction to her. And it's just so weird. And normally, I'm not a fan of things that aren't very straightforward. We've discussed before that I quite like the simple pop music.
Right.
And this is just really strange. It's kind of not always easy to listen to, and the arrangements are really weird, and the instruments are really kind of make you feel a bit like you're being bent out of shape. It's a really odd album, but I just think it's so brilliant.
Wow.
And it's really kind of cinematic, and the songs are all these self-contained little stories. And yeah, I think she's
Doreen, you're a fan too, aren't you? Is that the same? The same strange effect on you? Do you feel bent out of shape?
It's quite rare to find somebody that can write brilliant songs that has all the kind of chops to do the straightforward thing, and then does the stranger things. It's that whole argument with kind of, you know, later Radiohead it's like, is it to say I actually can't write really good direct songs anymore? Are they choosing not to, or can they not do it? And with that album, it's just like you can see the sort of really good but much more orthodox album below the surface.
Yeah.
And then every turn she's kind of doing stuff, and not just to go, look at me, I'm being kooky, but it kind of changes the meaning of the songs. It adds them, you know, something like Cheerleader, which I brought in last time. You know, that heavy distortion that comes in, that's kind of, you know, amplifies the lyric. That plays into what she's trying to say. And there's a lot of stuff about kind of bodies and sexuality and identity in this. And that kind of occasional sort of discordant and bursts of noise and elements of harshness seems to kind of add to the whole. I never get the sense... I know some people who aren't swayed by this record think there's a lot of kind of weirdness for the sake of it, but it never feels that way to me.
Okay, that's good. That's good. She also she really play guitar, can't she?
She can shred, I believe, the terms.
She really can shred. There's a clip of her, I might have mentioned this last time, on YouTube, doing Dig a Pony by the Beatles, which is not a particularly great, you know, not one of the Beatles' greatest songs, I don't think. And it's just her with the guitar, and it's totally amazing. Her playing is just brilliant. Well, look, we all like St. Vincent. So let's hear what happened when Rebecca caught up with Annie Erin Clark.
Going to start with the most important question, which is, can you tell me a little bit about the influence of Janet Jackson's Rhythm Nation on your album Strange Mercy?
You know, I was working in the studio, you know, you're in there like a day job, you know, 10, 12, 14 hours a day, just plowing away. So the last thing you really want to do at the end of a day in the studio is listen to any more music. But for some reason, the only record I could really stomach was Janet Jackson's Rhythm Nation. And then occasionally we would listen to Scott Walker for To and From Lunch.
And there was some talk radio involved, I believe.
Yeah, there's... And then I'd be driving home. I was in Dallas working with John Congleton, who I love, and his studio is in South Dallas, and my family lives in North Dallas, so I have about a 45-minute commute on the way home. And there are a lot of conservative Christian radio stations, and I would tune into one. I think it was Focus on the Family. I think it's that one. Sometimes I would just be, you know, kind of like, you know, awestruck and entertained, and then sometimes it would be so kind of... The logic seems so strange to me that I just had to turn it off. It would make me feel crazy. I was listening to one about, I guess, a crystal meth addiction. This poor couple was talking about losing their son to a crystal meth addiction. They were saying, well, you know, we're happy that God took him, because now he gets to be an example to other people to not use crystal meth. And it just seemed so... and then just some crazy stuff, like you get a lot of preachers being like, you know, the preaching about where the woman belongs and to serve her husband and that kind of stuff. And you'll get women talking about that too.
I mean, did you grow up around that kind of thing, being from Texas? I mean, I'm obviously painting Texas with very broad brushstrokes here, but...
We would get people coming during lunch hour. There was a group called Young Life. That was the sort of young Christian brother and sisterhood kind of people who were just above high school. They were maybe college, maybe a little older. But for some reason, it was allowed for them to come to lunch and proselytize to kids.
At school.
At school, yeah. They were allowed.
Forgive the kids, for they don't know how to live. Run the alleys casually, cruel.
When you were writing Strange Mercy, you kind of isolated yourself, didn't you?
I went to Seattle and I just turned off my technology for a little bit, for about a month, and sat in a studio. My friend Jason McGarry, who plays drums for Death Cab for Cutie, had a studio that was closing, and he said that I could come out there and just have free reign of that place for the month. And that's exactly what I did. I lived in a hotel downtown and just went to the studio 10 or 12 hours a day.
I mean, is that the first time that you've written like that, where you've kind of been completely on your own?
I've written in, you know, apartments alone, but there's a different... It makes a difference whether you know that if you start singing and start just going for it, you know that people can hear you in an apartment, and that will always be a little self-conscious. But in this instance, there was no way that I was being... heard or perceived by anyone, and so it was freeing. I have some terrible demos.
Do you kind of write the music separately to the lyrics?
On this record, no. I wrote it pretty symbiotically. And the reason I did that was because on the Actor record, I had written all the music first, and I had these ideas of what the melody ought to be, but I hadn't really sung the melodies at all until I got into the studio. And as a result, I think it's not that easy to sing, because some things can look great on paper, and they say exactly what you want to say. And then you sing them and you're like, that sounds like shit. That does not, yeah. That sounds clunky and awkward, and it's got to be simpler, simpler, simpler.
And you said elsewhere that this is your most personal record yet. What was that, a conscious decision? Did you decide to do that, or did it just come out that way?
I think I probably just started being less afraid of being emotional. I don't feel scared of showing that anymore, so it was just easier. It was just like, oh no, this is just human. This isn't, you're not being a pussy, this is just human.
So what made you toughen up?
What made me toughen up? Oh,
maybe open up rather than toughen up.
Oh, open up. 2010 was not a very good year in a personal way. And before, I had done so much hand-wringing over music, and I would be tremendously, like, tied in knots about what I was going to do and what music I was going to make, you know. And then I had actual problems, and then the music part was like, oh, yeah, this is great. This is easy.
Does it feel like it's more cathartic for you now?
Yeah. Yeah, it does. It sure does.
Going back once again to Strange Mercy, one of the things that I like the most about it is the kind of cinematic feel of the songs, and I understand that you're a big film fan yourself. Can we talk a little bit about the directors that you like?
Yeah, I think my favourite modern directors would be Andrea Arnold and the British Steve McQueen and Lynn Ramsey, who made Ratcatcher and Morven Caller. And kind of anything with Samantha Morton. I just feel like she really knocks it out of the park.
Obviously, you did the song for Twilight with Bon Iver, but would you be interested in scoring a whole film?
I would be interested in doing that. I was talking to the guys in Tindersticks who have scored all the Claire Denis films, and apparently she just gives them free rein, says, here's a film, and she doesn't tell them where or what to put in it. I think if it was that kind of situation. Really what a director wants is a Rolling Stones song, but they can't use the Rolling Stones song because they can't afford it.
It costs a fortune, yeah.
Exactly. So they're like, we kind of want this. Can you kind of do this? And you go, well, I mean, I guess I could try, but why...
And you have a guest appearance in the new series of Portlandia. So you're kind of moving to the other side of the camera. Is that something you'll do more of, do you think?
I would do more of that if it presented itself. I'm not like, oh, I'm just aching to be a movie star or something like that. Although in my experience of doing music videos, which I know is very different, I do enjoy just like being on set and watching everybody else work really hard. And then like the actor, the talent comes in and like, they just need to hit their marks, you know.
So really it's laziness. One thing I'd like to ask you about is the album with David Byrne.
Yeah.
You've been working on that for a while, haven't you?
We have. We started working on that about 2 years ago. But I've been on tour and he's been on tour and he's always got a million things going on, and but we've got about half a record done, and we're gonna go in January and do more.
How is it working as a collaboration if you don't see each other often?
We do everything by proxy. We send just big files over the internet, and he'll send me songs or ideas, and I'll add to them, and I'll send him ideas, and he'll add to them, and it's just totally collaborative.
And lastly, you did a song as well for Boardwalk Empire, didn't you? Can you tell me a little bit about that?
They're doing really interesting work over there. With their music supervision, they are unearthing a lot of songs from the 20s that aren't very well known, and in some cases haven't even been recorded. And so I sing a song called "Make Believe," and I went in with with studio work you never know. So I was prepping myself to be in the studio for 12 hours. I mean, I don't know why, I just had in my brain, like, oh, I'll need to pack a lunch, you know, like, I'm going to be here for a while. But they had a big band that was amazing, and I just went in the vocal booth and sang the song with the big band 4 or 5 times, and that was it.
So maybe you need to do a big band album next.
Yeah. yep, that's next. That'll be financially feasible to take on tour.
Yeah.
St. Vincent there with Rebecca. Let's move on. Let's listen to some new music now. Three tracks to hear. We're going to start with Dorian's Choice.
The troubles came, I saved what I could see. A thread of light, a particle away. But there were chains, so I hastened to behave. There were chains, so I loved you like a slave.
That's Leonard Cohen. Leonard Cohen. Back. Well, I didn't assume he was going to make any more. I assumed he wasn't going to make any more records.
No.
That's Show Me the Place, which is coming out on his his next album, his new album, Old Ideas. It's called out in January. Dorian, tell me, what'd you bring that in for then?
Because, like you, I didn't think he was going to make another album. The last one, I think, was 2004. I saw him three times on his last tour, which was just the most amazing thing. And no less amazing on each occasion, you know. Once was at Glastonbury, which was just one of the most transformative sort of musical experiences of my life, I think. And there's something about his voice, the way that it kind of started off. I mean, if you go back to the early records, it was like back then people thought he had quite a deep voice.
Yeah.
And now it sounds like, you know, Joe Pasquale by comparison. And it's getting sort of deeper and deeper, almost to kind of like, it's almost sub-bass. And, you know, this sounds like, as a song on its own, not sure this is kind of like, wow, this is one of the greats. I can see it fitting in with a whole album. It's going to have that kind of, you know, that kind of Lion in Winter vibe that you have with, you know, those late Johnny Cash records. Because the thing there is that Johnny Cash was hardly writing any songs. It was mostly cover versions about being old and dying soon.
Yeah, carefully chosen cover versions.
So the idea that Cohen has been working on some of these songs for years, apparently. You know, he is one of my favourite songwriters of all time. He has had very distinct phases, you know, difference between the Songs of Leonard Cohen era and the I'm Your Man era.
Yeah.
And what's quite tempting here is it doesn't have any of that kind of, those naff production touches, which kind of plagued a lot of his later work, even some of my favourite songs.
Yeah, absolutely.
You just think, oh, not that drum sound. Mm. I'm just intrigued to see what happens with this album. And if there's any, what kind of songwriting he's doing now?
I mean, I am interested for two reasons. I didn't like his last album at all, Dear Heather. I don't think it's a particularly good record. It seemed like kind of a bit of a half-hearted record to me.
Yeah.
Also, I thought his voice was just completely shot. It appeared to be completely shot. And he appeared to be letting sort of various female backing singers sing. You know, he was going to come in and mutter a bit in a slightly almost sort of Serge Gainsbourg-ish way. It just seemed a bit like, you know, I remember reading a review, and I think it was Uncut, and this is the best album he's ever made. And it's like, you know, it's that sort of desperate special, but, you know, I really understand Leonard Cohen, and that's why this is, you know, people think that The Drift is the best Scott Walker album, that kind of thing. His voice appears to have improved, which is a really odd thing from that record.
I just find it a wonderful resonant thing. You know, I like Tom Waits when he's doing the kind of boozy heartbreaker bit.
Yeah.
You know, I love Lee Hazelwood's voice. You know, I really like that kind of resonant, lived-in voice.
Yeah.
But what struck me about hearing this was some people were saying about the Kate Bush album, which is that thing of losing your melodic muscle as you get older, and that a lot of artists, when they're older, they do make records which are based on sort of simpler melodies. It's more about the sound, less memorable songs. I love the Kate Bush album, but there's no like cloud busting or running up that hill.
No, there's not a big single on it. Rebecca, are you a Leonard Cohen fan?
I'm a Leonard Cohen. It feels like the sort of thing that I need to go back and learn more about, because I couldn't call myself a dedicated fan. I think my favourite Leonard Cohen song is First We Take Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
I like all that. I like that kind of that era. But this is lovely. It's like getting into a really hot bath and just being surrounded by Leonard Cohen bubbles. I don't think that works.
No, that's an interesting metaphor.
But it's very cosy and lovely and warm and wintry.
He does seem kind of a warm figure now, which it's an interesting thing. I was watching that we had a thing about it on the podcast, that documentary about his world tour of when it was 1972 or something like that, and on that he comes across as sort of angst-ridden, difficult, remote man. And bizarrely, I heard him interviewed a couple of years ago on, of all places, the Steve Wright Show on Radio 2, and he was a hoot. he was really funny and kind of telling these anecdotes and, you know, da-da-da. And yeah. he just seems to have turned into this sort of kind of charming...
Well, that's the only thing I miss in this song, I think, is, of course, I love the humour. You know, you hear in First We Take Manhattan or Tower of Song or whatever, and you saw it a lot when he was performing live. It's incredibly droll. And here, his lyrics seem much more pared down. Mm. It's much more... This would kind of resonate with someone that knew him from Hallelujah.
Yeah.
There's a kind of hymnal, religious... you know, and I suppose an old age, you know, a kind of autumnal quality to it.
But
and I hope his humour's still there.
A sexy song as well, which is, I don't know if either of you picked up on that, but it's a sexy song.
Women seem to find Leonard Cohen absolutely irresistible.
He's 77.
I know, but he's got a thing.
Septuagenarian.
Well, look, I should really look forward to hearing Leonard Cohen's Old Ideas when it comes out in January. You can get that track now if you pre-order Old Ideas from his website. Otherwise... You can just wait till the album comes out. Okay, next track is from me.
Je ne veux rien inventer. Le bouse de la brousse. Avec Konono sous le pouce. Les fêtes feedback à coup de disto. Me détache du lot sur des notes staccato. Alterne entre tradition et moderne. Ça reste frais donc on discerne le pattern. Ma poésie est en mouvement. Le bruit est une assise, non pas un divan. Je laisse le sabre descendant de Boris Vian. Moi je me réclame du K1, des déviants. Et j'appuie au salut manche. J'ai un payé mon dû, donc garde le change. Différent malgré les vies de
France. Oh, racket. That's a Bologi. Oh, I think I believe that's pronounced, featuring Konono Number One, and the track is called Caribou Yabintu. I assume I've pronounced that right. He is a Congolese rapper. I believe he's based in Belgium. This is his second album, I think, called, which is coming out over here on the 5th of December. It's called Kinshasa Sukazal. Sukasale, I don't know how you pronounce it. I was sort of intrigued by that. I think one of the things I really love about Konono Number One, who are a Amplified Lekembe orchestra, who you've probably heard of. There's quite a lot of... made some records of Bjork and things like that. Is that it completely... There's no way you can approach it with that world music, worthiness. It's just this really berserk noise that they make. And it's not like, oh, you know... There's nothing kind of traditional about it. It's kind of, you know, they're playing traditional instruments, but they've amplified them in such a way that it's all feedback and noise. And when you see them live, it's like the end of the world. It's absolutely amazing. It's like Rez by Underworld played by the White Light, White Heat, Era Velvet Underground. They're an incredible band. And I just thought that track... sounded sort of amazing insofar as if that came out and that had somebody rapping, it came out of America and had a big name rapper rapping over the top of it, you'd be like, this is the most experimental, berserk kind of, you know, production you could possibly imagine. And I also think that he raps in French, Bologi, or sometimes he raps in French. And French is just a language that really, really works with hip hop. I just think it sounds great. I don't really know what he's speaking of French, know what he's singing about, but just the actual sound of it is really good. I just really like that. It goes on forever as well. It's about 5 minutes long. There's a brilliant, brilliant video on YouTube as well. It's a completely berserk video of three guys dressed as skeletons sort of wandering through the middle of Kinshasa. It's really cool. Anywho, what did the rest of you make of it? Dorian?
Well, sometimes when I hear African hip-hop, some African hip-hop that's talked about, I'm kind of disappointed that the production seems so American, and even though the concerns, you know, the lyrical concerns, sometimes the language is African, it seems to be kind of musically a bit underwhelming. And this sounds, thanks to Konono Number One's racket, this just sounds so kind of avant-garde. And like you say, it sounds other. It sounds... it sounds from somewhere else, but not in that kind of, not with those simple world music signifiers.
Yeah.
It sounds generally avant-garde, like you say, if it did have, you know, Talib Kweli on it or something, Kanye West or whatever, you know, it would still be remarkable. There's no sort of special bleeding involved, and I like the fact that kind of it is quite grating.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like I found it quite hard.
Yeah.
To get through, and I thought, well, that's good. Right, like it's kind of stimulating, and I want to go back to that. And
yeah,
you have to try and sort of find your way into what they're doing there. It's not.
I think it's the fact that the Lekembe on it appears to be completely out of tune with the guitar. I mean, it really clashes. It's yeah. a sort of very odd means of production. The guy, I assume the guy that produced it is the Kanono's regular producer, a guy called Vincent Dennis, who's a sort of old Belgian punk and quite an intriguing figure in himself. He's the guy that kind of tracked Kanono down when nobody knew what had happened to them and various members had died and things like that. I agree, it is quite hard. It is quite heavy going, but you know.
It sounds quite live. It sounds like they've kind of just sort of set up on a corner somewhere yeah. and just gone, let's just do this in one take.
Yeah.
It
yeah,
sounds
yeah.
like a garage band playing a hip hop song, which I really
yeah.
like.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. yeah. You like it, Rebecca?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Yes. I did some homework actually. I asked my French friend if he could translate it
okay.
for me, and he couldn't. He said it's very dialect heavy.
Right.
But the
right.
introduction he got the gist of, and there's something about dark magic in there, apparently.
His name, Balogi, apparently means sorcerer.
Ah, well, that makes sense.
And he's sort of the lyrical sorcerer. Balogi, the album, Kinshasa. Sukursale, Sukursale is how it's spelt. Out on the 5th of December on Crammed Discs. Check it out. The rest of the album is really good as well. All sorts of intriguing collaborations with various people on there. Our last track is Rebecca's Choice.
Straight sexing, no handcuffs or arresting. And I ain't coming off on my last name, cause I really can't take no stressing. About where I done been, who I done hit. Your homegirl saying he a bad boy, but I'm signed to the rock, no time for the gossip. Bitch, put down them tabloids.
She said, I heard you got a main chick, a mistress and some hoes. You be up to no good and everybody know. My homegirls tried to want me, they tried to let me know. What you got, I need a lot, so I can't let you go.
She said, I can't get enough.
J. Cole and Trey Songz with a Z. Can't get enough. Rebecca, you brought that in. Tell us about it. Tell us why.
I did, and I'm so happy to lower the tone after Leonard Cohen and the Congolese.
I thought that fit quite well because it had a little bit of African flavour to it.
I think it's a great song. Yeah, it's just what I like about it is the naffness of the lyrics. They're all so R. Kelly cheesy, but I really love that kind of thing.
Excellent.
Like, just, yeah, really, some of them do make you groan. Not in the way they'd like to make you groan.
The one that goes, I like it when she gives me head.
Yeah,
I hate it when she gives me headaches.
Yeah, basically.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he prefers blowjobs to migraines.
Now, there's your lyrical sorcerer.
Wow.
Yeah,
just
full of those
magicking words out
amazing.
There.
But I keep going
dance.
Back to it. I've listened to it so much this week. I keep putting on my headphones, having a walk around. I think it's a great song.
Who are for the benefit of anyone who doesn't know, who are J. Cole and who is Trey Songz?
Came to these two people yep. separately. J. Cole did a verse on Beyonce's Party that's not on the album version, but Andre 3000, I believe, probably didn't want to be in the video, so they got J. Cole in to do okay. a different version of his bit. And Trey Songz did a track last year with Nicki Minaj called Bottoms Up, which is just fantastic. Nicki Minaj's rap on that is so much better than anything she's done
wow.
since. It's just really, really good.
Is it about bums?
No, it's about getting drunk.
Oh,
and
right.
and
oh,
and Bottoms and yeah, and Anna Nicole Smith and Children in Haiti. It's worth it's
wow.
worth
wow.
listening to just to see how she gets all of that in there. So yeah, but they've kind of both been doing things separately, and this is I think it's J. Cole's track and Trey Songz is guesting on it, but I just think it's great.
Cool. Dorian,
well, when I was younger I used to be very annoyed when my dad would hear a song that I was enjoying and go, you want to hear the original of that? And I was like, no, I want to hear the Jesus and Mary Chain's version because it's probably better. And I'm going to do that now because I kind of thought, god, that's an amazing, amazing backing track. And looked it up, and
what is it?
The name escapes me. It's from Guinea. It's a band from Guinea that kind of ran, you know, from the sort of 60s, 70s.
Okay.
And it's kind of, that's an extraordinary song. And then you kind of, you know, read about the backstory of these guys. You know, hard times, as you can imagine, Guinea, 60s, 70s kind
yeah,
of.
Yeah, like, pretty rough.
Assorted yeah. hard times. And then you think it probably deserves better than someone rapping about beating the pussy up. But maybe. You know, I'm aware.
Maybe they'd be into that.
No, I'm aware that that's true. I haven't
maybe
asked them.
Song, maybe that's what the lyrics of that original song are about. Maybe it's.
I might be patronising them. I haven't asked about their stance, Ray Pussy Beat.
Really? That's got me quite into it.
And yeah, so I don't know. I just felt like, you know, I mean, obviously, I do love hip hop, and I love hip hop's ability sometimes to be stupid and crass, and you know, that's part of it. But I just felt like there was a kind of sinuousness and a joy and something going on in the music which was kind of, you know, had a wet towel thrown over it by just this kind of like, just filling space.
Right.
Kind of lyric,
right.
You know, which is very different to say what Nicki Minaj does. There's never a feeling that she's, you know, with that, that's joy. Her rapping over that, you know, it kind of would parallel it. Like when Missy Elliott raps over a kind of a really unusual sample that Timbaland's dug up, her voice seems to kind of fit with stuff that he's sourced from all over the world.
As opposed to when Timbaland raps over something that Timbaland has dug up and it just falls flat.
It's just kind of terrible. It's just kind of lumpy. It's one of those songs that just works if I tune out all the words and just listen to the sort of tone of the voice.
Me laugh. I mean, they're awful, but they're so awful that they're funny. It is an R. Kelly, thing.
Or Kanye, he's always doing. Headaches.
Yeah,
that kind of thing.
Love that. Eminem's window pane. That's
amazing. That's
the, was window. It? Looking through the window. It hurts. So that I guess that's why they call it window.
Yeah, he talks about climbing out this when it's his girlfriend who's been beating up climbs out the window. It hurts. I guess that's why they call it window pain.
Jesus,
it's the worst lyric of all time.
But okay, well look, that is the third track on the album Cold World, the sideline story. Is that a pun? Or am I just missing a? Cold World, the sideline story. Anyway, it was out in September, but that's coming out as a single on Monday, is it? Okay, cool. Looking at last week's programme, when I was away... So what happens when I go away? Legendary journalists, left, right and centre, suddenly appear on the podcast. We had Barney Hoskins and Nick Kent.
I thought you were going to say Tim Jones.
No.
He was ascending order of importance.
I was building up. Not only Nick Kent. Yeah, so we had a succession of journalistic legends on the show. Which Tim presented, Sean Rowe was on as well. Barney Hoskins chose Get Involved by George Soule in a departure from my usual reviewing rules. And Pop Bijou came down like a ton of bricks. Can we strictly have only today's music on the Singles Club? Because it's actually much easier to listen to music of the past. That's a good point. Very good point.
There's a lot of it.
There's a lot of it, and it's a lot more easily accessible than once it was. I looked to the podcast to discover music I wouldn't necessarily seek out. Okay. Point taken. While we're on the blog, there was lots of chatter about the Nick Kent interview that featured last week. Quite hard to break it down to a few comments here. Go and have a read of it. It's worth casting your eye over. Comments for this week now, please. You can do that at guardian.co.uk/musicweekly or indeed tweet your thoughts at musicweeklypod. That's it for this week's programme. We'll be back next Friday as always. Don't forget to tweet us or leave a comment. The links are at guardian.co.uk/musicweekly, all one word. Thank you, Rebecca.
Thank you
for coming in. Love it to see you. Thank you, Dorian.
Cheers.
And thanks to you all for listening. I'm Alexis Petridis. The programme is produced by Scott Corley.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.